Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, in your latest column, you went with the, if you have to explain it, you're probably on the wrong. I've always just used the, like my, the only thing I can basically quote from Shakespeare, but it's the lady doth protest too much. I feel like it's the same thing in terms of what the SEC has done from a public relations, I guess, aspect. But I think that's really the let's start here. What did last week actually accomplish?
They didn't really accomplish anything other than I do feel like they got a better feel inside the SEC for which playoff format they might prefer. I mean, coming into the meetings, you know, it certainly seemed like the SEC had more momentum behind the Big Ten's auto bid plan. And though they didn't decide anything, I do feel like the mood shifted across the 3 days. And I think they broke ranks more in favor of the 5+11 model. But yeah, I mean, they really didn't accomplish much. I mean, and it's interesting how you look at kind of the propaganda campaign. There is a camp, I'm not really in it, that believes it was like this great flex by the conference and like reminding people who swings the biggest sword. But I'm much more in the camp, as you said, like if you're explaining, you're losing. Like the SEC would not have to pass out these packets of information about why they should get more playoff bids if their top programs had performed better these last few years. And that's really the long and short of it is, you know, when programs like LSU and Auburn are not punching at the weight that they could, and even Alabama last season, not punching to weight, you're left in a situation where you kind of have to beg and explain your way into the playoffs when otherwise you could just play your way in undeniably on the field.
The other thing I was thinking about, and I don't know if there's, I don't know if anyone really is this skilled strategically, but I was wondering to a certain degree, do you think that they are worried, like now's that we can still like have a claim to we're still the best conference, but are they like actually worried if they go another year without a national champion, like if they start to lose their leverage or their grip on the sport? And so therefore it's like, well, strike while the iron's hot.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest arrow in the quiver, I guess, for the SEC is the fact that they can point to the past 20 years and say, look how many national championships we've won. But now it's been two in a row for the Big Ten. And yeah, I mean, I think when it's just two, you can call it a coincidence. Once it gets to the point of if it got to the point of three or four, you start to call it a pattern. And the other thing is, like, it's going to become less and less relevant for the SEC to tout its history when we have now new data from the NIL era. And if the Big Ten schools start to show some dominance and it's still early days, but, you know, if they start to show some dominance in this NIL era, again, I think that kind of waters down a little bit what the SEC achieved in the past when there was an entirely different set of rules.
So, Blake, when we look at the voting process for this, you know, we just had the vote not too long ago to eliminate the
seating,
to bring back straight seating, right, or bring in straight seating, right? Mm-hmm. And it had to be unanimous. What do we know about the voting for the structure of the playoff heading into 2026? Because that's what I'm curious about. I know the Big 12 has come out and said they support a 5+11. It seems like that's the way the SEC is trending. The Big 10 is quietly kind of dropping hints like, whoa, we play 9 conference games. We think we should have the 4-4-3 or 4-4-2-2-1. How does the voting go? Because that's what I think that's the part where I'm like, all right, I've had enough of people, you know, arguing. At what point, when we get to a vote, how does it play out? And what is the voting process? Do we know?
Yeah, as I understand it, it's pretty muddy. I mean, you know, it used to have to be unanimous, as you said. We know that's changed. It no longer has to be unanimous, but no one has really explained, because I think there really isn't an easy explanation for exactly how it works. I mean, we know the SEC and the Big Ten have outsized clout, or maybe not outsized, they have the most clout, whereas before, everybody got a vote and everybody's vote counted the same. We know that that has changed for 2026 and beyond, and it's now kind of written into the rules that the SEC and the Big Ten have more voice, more clout. But what does that actually mean, right? And it doesn't mean that the Big 12 and the ACC are utterly voiceless. I think the short answer is we don't really know what that looks like. I think if you have the SEC and the Big Ten voting in the same direction, then it's sort of game over, right? Like, I'm not sure unless you were to want to challenge something through the court system, that's an option. But shy of the court system, I think if the SEC and Big Ten are voting in unison on something, to me, it's game, set, match. That wins. But if the SEC and Big Ten are in two different directions, how does that work? I don't think we really have an answer to that. And that is sort of one of the flaws. One of the flaws of the old system and requiring unanimity was it was hard to make changes, because all it took was one person drawing a line in the sand and saying, nope, I'm not going to go for this format. I'm not voting for it. And then you couldn't get it. Now, I think the issue is it works great if the SEC and the Big Ten are on the same page, because they can just kind of strong arm everybody else into going along with it. But if they're not on the same page, if they want two different things, yeah, I think the long and short of it is we don't really know how that works.
Well, that's the interesting thing maybe this is part of the weakness that we talked about last week of the SEC, where it is a little bit more democratic. It felt to me like the SEC was kind of on board with the whole the soccer formation, as I started referring to it. Because, like, all right, we're going to get our play-in game, more inventory, we're going to keep the championship game powerful. And so it felt like to me at a certain point they were both on the same side. But was it once they got to Destin they figured out not everybody was on that side?
Yeah, I think it was once the coaches learned more about the two different plans. You know, I mean, this is one of the things we're reminded of in situations like this. Like, you know, not everybody follows along with every word of this like we do, right? And that even includes the coaches. The coaches they're worried about building, maintaining, developing their rosters. They're not consuming.
Well,
you know,
to your point, I actually thought the funniest quote from the whole thing was not anything an AD said that was like wildly hypocritical. It was Kirby to y'all. The most important thing is getting the calendar. Like, you know, like it's like, yeah. It shows like the most important thing, like he was saying of all things, like of everything, of every issue, the most important thing was the calendar. It's like that gives you like a little peek into they are just in a different world.
That's exactly right. And so I do think for a lot of the coaches, this was their first time like really understanding what these playoff
Wait, what?
are. I mean, like, because we've had these Big Ten SEC summits, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know who's not at these summits?
The coaches.
The coaches. the coaches aren't there. So I don't think a lot of them really knew all the details of these formats until they got to Destin. And that is one of the beauties of these spring meetings. Some people have said, like, do we still need them? Could they move to Zoom? I do think there is still some value of getting all the coaches together face-to-face in a room. And as they heard these two formats, I think it was like, no, we don't really like this auto bid plan where the Big Ten is guaranteed the same number of bids at us. And I think the bigger sticking point for the coaches, and I'm not surprised by this, I think the biggest sticking point was they didn't like the play-in thing. Like, you spend all season, you spend 3 months getting yourself to the third place spot in the SEC standings. You're ranked number, say, 11 in the CFP rankings. You want to know, as a coach at that point, you're in the playoff. Not that you have to go strap it up one more time against the sixth place team in the SEC, which you may have already faced during the regular season.
And honestly, that sixth place team might just be sixth place because you had a better schedule than they did.
Right. And that just, coaches do not like that idea. And I think that was the biggest thing, is like, ADs like that idea because it's inventory to sell, right?
Yep.
Coaches, though, it's like, no, I don't want my season coming down to one game. Not when I've spent 12 games climbing my way to third place in the standings and ranked 11th. You know, I mean, there's always going to be a villain here. And if you don't get in, yeah, you blame the committee. But I actually think coaches would rather be on the outside looking in and have to and be able to blame the committee than to have their season come down to a play-in game and lose and have no one to blame but themselves for losing the play-in game. Coaches, I don't think they like that idea.
Well, I think to your point, like, think about it on like a micro level. Oftentimes what we see is if your team gets screwed, that ends up being a rallying cry for your fan base, and all of a sudden maybe you got a couple of extra million bucks to play with, and maybe you can buy a couple more players for next year.
Unless you're Florida State.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that did motivate them. They just spent very poorly. Like, they just bought really bad players. I mean, that's, we'll be on the 15th team to give up on DJ Uiagalelei. But whereas if you're to blame and your team, like, just doesn't show up and gets beat, oftentimes, like, they target you, and it's like, listen, we're going on a vacation next year. I'm not giving another $15,000.
Yeah. It just, the worst case scenario for a coach is to be sitting there third or fourth place in your standings, and you think you're in, and your fan base is okay with you at that point, unless maybe you're Ohio State in fourth place in the standings. But for most coaches, you think, I'm good. I've survived another season. I'm in good shape here.
Maybe Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, and maybe not if you're Kalen DeBoer, but for most coaches. And then to go out and have to play one more, that is just the nightmare scenario for coaches. So I think once they got in the room and started hearing about these two formats, and because the 5 plus 11 leaves just as many access opportunities, actually more access opportunities for the SEC. So you have that on one hand. It's like, it doesn't limit access for the SEC. And also coaches learn, well, I don't have to play these play-in games that I don't want to play anyway. So, you know, you add it together, and I think it's easy to see why the coaches, once they learned more information about the models, thought, no, we kind of like this 5 plus 11 thing.
Can we talk football?
I was going to pivot there, too.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Is anything happening?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I was looking at Texas A&M's schedule.
Oh, no, don't. I took the pledge. Y'all two have to hold me accountable. If I ever start talking myself into A&M this year, you have to stop me immediately and remind me.
That's not where I was going.
All right, well, continue.
So we've got game of the year lines out now. And once again, point spreads are just a guideline. And as we learned last night in the NBA Finals, you can have an underdog win, as we all know. But Texas A&M, if you look at their schedule, they've got a night game at Notre Dame, week 3, where they're a touchdown underdog. They've got a regular season finale at Texas, right now about a 10.5-point underdog. They play LSU, about a 4.5-point underdog. Their win total sitting at 8.5. Like, I know they bring back a lot, and I'm a pro Elko guy, but I don't know about you guys. Are we? I don't think this is a playoff team. That schedule's pretty challenging, and there's a couple other landmines out there. You know, they do avoid some of the big boys. I think they avoid Bama and Georgia and Ole Miss, but they also play Florida at Arkansas could be weird. At Missouri could be weird. South Carolina. What are we making of Texas A&M this year?
Yeah, if you give me the two options of, in one hand I can pick playoff, and the other hand I can pick like 7-5 or 8-4, I'm telling you 7-5, 8-4 is more likely than playoff. And maybe it's a sweet spot in the middle of 9-3. But if those are my choices, 10-2 or better in the playoff, or 8-4, 7-5, I think it's 8-4, 7-5. And the other thing is, like, I look at the way A&M finished last season, and I think, okay, which was the real A&M, the team that got hot in the middle of the season or the one at the end? And I don't know, maybe it's the one at the end. And the other thing is, I think Marcel Reed at quarterback is fine for A&M. I don't think – I think I would much rather have Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier, DJ Lagway, probably a few more other guys tossed in, right? Like, he was so different from Connor Wigman. I think it was a useful change for A&M in the middle of the season when they needed one. But then once defenses had a little more time to game plan for him, I'm not saying it was all him, but I just think, like, I guess I'm less sold on A&M at quarterback than I am some other teams. And when you add that in with how the season finished, with the schedule, yeah, Marcel Reed's an exciting playmaker, but I don't know. I don't believe in him as much as I believe in certain other quarterbacks in this conference.
I also... This is half-baked, so I'm workshopping this. Are we sure Elko is, like, an elite coach? Because I think we keep doing this move of...
He's good.
I think we keep treating Duke football like it's, like, 1984. And if you win six games there, like, it's some kind of miracle. Whereas I'm like, y'all, I've been a David Cutcliffe proponent for a very long time. I think he's a very solid coach. He won pretty big there. Manny Diaz, who I think most people objectively don't think is a good coach, is basically winning at the same level. Like,
yeah.
Are we, like, and I'm not saying, like, oh, I this guy's, like, wildly overrated, whatnot, but it's like, I'm not 100% sold that, like, just because you won at Duke, that means you'll win everywhere.
I think that's a great point, and I think there's another point influencing the perception of Elko, and it's that it became so easy and so much fun, frankly, to make fun of Jimbo Fisher.
Yes.
At the end of his tenure. You know, when you just love to hate on the last guy, you just automatically assume, well, this guy's better, and the last guy was the problem.
This right? is a real football coach.
Yeah, this guy's a real coach and not just a carnival barker. Well, you know, look, I think Texas A&M should have fired Jimbo Fisher. He flopped there. All those things are true, right? But that doesn't mean the next guy is better automatically just because the last guy flopped and ran his mouth all the time and didn't back it up on the field. But I think that is the tendency that we all kind of have, right? Like when the last guy proved himself a failure, you think, well, this guy's got to be better, particularly when the new guy is the opposite of the old guy. And Mike Elko, he's the opposite of Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher was a headline waiting to happen with the way he flapped his jaws. Elko, he's a ball coach, you know, all business, you know, lock horns and win in the mud, those type of things. That type of stuff just doesn't really matter. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it is fair to be skeptical of Mike Elko. If I remember, like, back when they made that hire and we do these hiring grades, right? I think I gave the hire like a C+. Like, I wasn't over the moon about it. I thought, okay, I would probably rather have Mike Elko than Mark Stoops, who is the other name, you know, most closely attached to the job. If those are the two options, I think Texas A&M probably made the better choice. But yeah, overall, I didn't think they knocked it out of the park with that hire. And I think year one hasn't really made me change my opinion on that. I thought overall, at the end of the day, they're 8-5, which is kind of fair to Midland for Texas A&M.
Well,
long term, expect more of them.
What was their best win?
LSU, right? They beat LSU at home. I think that was probably their best win. I mean, you know, LSU 9-14.
That was a big comeback, right?
That was
put in Marcel Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the one that put them on the map of, like, oh, hey, Texas A&M can get to Atlanta. You know, like that was when people started looking at things like, they could be playing in the conference championship. And they got some buzz around that narrative, but then it all jumped the rails in November. So, Yeah, I think beating LSU was the biggie, which is, I mean, that's not nothing. That's not a good win.
But it's also like that was a 4-loss team.
Yeah.
They got a ton. You know what else they got a ton of mileage of? A team that none of us believed in, and they annoyed us the entire year because we're like, this team's not any good.
Missouri.
They got a lot of mileage from just beating the hell out of Missouri that 11 a.m. day.
I think that's true because at that point, you know, Missouri had not been revealed to be a playoff fraud, and Texas A&M was the one. We all kind of suspected it, right? It's not like we were shocked, like, oh my gosh, Missouri's not actually going to make the playoff. But that was the game that hammered it home, right? A&M got to do the defrauding, or I guess unmasking of the fraud, I should say. So, yeah, they got some mileage out of that, particularly because, like, that really wasn't a big Saturday. That, as I recall, that was kind of a weak Saturday of games. And so
that was the Saturday Vanderbilt beat Alabama.
Yeah, so it became a wacky Saturday, right?
But to your point, like, it wasn't like, you know, that game, Vanderbilt beat Alabama on the SEC network. It wasn't
exactly,
even, you know what I mean?
Like the lineup of games was
Game day was in Berkeley. That was the game day in Berkeley night where Cam Ward threw the terrible play.
Well, I think you can just say, like, I think that proves Blake's point.
I'm agreeing with Blake. I wasn't trying to push back.
Game day was at Berkeley. All right, enough said. That was a weird week.
I want to hit this real quickly because I don't know if you guys saw this. This is pretty big news. Evan Stewart might be done for the year at Oregon.
Sounds like he is done for the year.
And I was looking at the odds today. There are currently 8 teams that are favored to make the playoff. So you could get plus money on them to miss the playoff. And those 8 are Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Oregon, Georgia, Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson. Obviously, all 8 of those teams are not going to make it. Probably multiple won't make it. I'm kind of starting to think Oregon, I might have more questions than answers. We know they'll have tons of talent, obviously, but they've got question marks at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just, you look at their schedule, they've got to go on the road to Penn State in a whiteout. I think this Oregon team, they got to play Indiana. They got to play. They don't have Ohio State or Michigan, but I don't know. I'm curious your thoughts on Oregon right now.
Yeah, I think the opportunity is still there to go like 10-2, but
sure.
I think
you probably
you're
make
right.
it at
like
10-2.
They feel like they feel less like a slam dunk to me than some of those other teams that you rattled off, and I don't know that they're being treated that way because they were the number one seed last year, right? And you know, we all know that there's a little bit of rear view mirror looking when some of these preseason prognostications come out. But no, I think that's a fair reality of it for Oregon with the quarterback transition, with the Evan Stewart situation. I don't think it's a slam dunk for Oregon in the playoff. In fact, if I were saying the likeliest Big Ten teams to make the playoff, I would have Oregon no higher than third on the list. I mean, Ohio State probably looks like the most slam dunk of the Big Ten team to make the playoff. But also, I mean, Penn State, boy, they return so much. I would be pretty surprised if the playoff's not including Penn State. So, yeah, in terms of Big Ten pecking order, I wouldn't have Oregon at the top, and I wouldn't have him in the number 2 spot either.
It's like, I get it. I don't know if he's going to be – like, I would suspect he's not going to start meaningful NFL games. But Dylan Gabriel won a lot of games in college football. Like, yeah. And Dante Moore is, like, looks the part, but, like, man, I just don't know. Like, he's probably immensely talented, but, I mean, how many times do we see immensely talented guys that you just go, eh?
Like, is the Penn State game on the road?
Yes. It's
Happy Valley whiteout.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think you can probably watch it on the cock.
No, yeah. it's big NBC.
Streaming also a lot. The one that I'm kind of struggling with, are we really going to do Georgia and Gunnar Stockton?
I don't know that I'm going to do Gunnar Stockton, and that's why I would not have Georgia. If we're doing the same exercise for the SEC, who's most likely to make the playoff from the SEC on down the line, I would not have Georgia in the pole position because I have questions about the game's most important position. I think they're going to be fine everywhere else on the field. I don't think they're as loaded as they were, you know, in the back-to-back championship seasons. But yeah, they're going to have talent at other places. But yeah, the sample size from Gunnar Stockton, it doesn't have me ready to write Georgia into the playoff in ink. The one thing about Georgia, though, like, their non-conference schedule is a joke this year. You know, they played Clemson last year. That's not there. So the non-conference is a joke. But then you look at the conference schedule, they have Texas, they have Alabama, Florida, you know, was getting better at the end of last season.
They moved that to Atlanta, though.
Yeah, true. I mean, they have Tennessee. So, they, I mean, what, Ole Miss? I mean, I still think Ole Miss is a top 25 team. So you got like five games against top 25 teams, and you need to win at least three of them. I think it's more likely than not that Georgia does, but no, they don't feel as slam dunky to me as maybe Texas does, although maybe my opinion on Texas changes if they get skunked in Columbus in week one. I mean, that's the difference, right? Is Georgia's, and unless they get stunned by Georgia Tech, which they almost did last year, but Georgia doesn't have that Ohio State equivalent on their schedule like Texas does. But I would probably still start the list with Texas. And I actually think maybe I'm just like falling into the trap of like, I'm not fading Brian Kelly at LSU fast enough because I'm not fading him. And maybe I'll look back and say, yeah, I was slow to the party on that, but I think LSU could be the best team in the SEC. And nobody seems like they're talking about them to the extent that, you know, Texas is in the headlines and even Georgia and Alabama. Like, other than the fact that it's fun for people on Twitter to make fun of Brian Kelly and make gifs of him getting mad on the sidelines, like what reason is there to not like LSU? Are we just thinking like, well, they've been so bad on defense the last few years that just because they got a bunch of transfers doesn't mean they're going to be better? Okay, that maybe is one idea. But beyond that,
I'll tell you what it is for me.
What's that?
I don't have the Garrett Nussmeier gene.
Mm.
He can, yeah. Listen, he has a phenomenal arm. I'm not denying that. But man, it's the same experience I used to get insane when Carson Wentz for the Eagles, like, this is the MVP of the league. And I used to go insane. It's like, you only watch Red Zone. Because if you watched him throughout the course of a game, like, he's not all there. But he has some of these plays where you're like, oh my God. And Nussmeier has some throws where you're like, oh my God. And he's had some nifty scrambles. But it's like when you watch the entire body of work, I'm just left very apathetic.
I think that's fair, but like when we're looking at other top teams,
that's the problem.
I'd rather have Nussmeier than I would Gunnar Stockton. Arch Manning, sure, maybe I'd take Arch, but I've seen a lot more of Nussmeier. Nussmeier's got to cut down on some of the interceptions. I don't know if he can. That is the knock.
He does a lot of the there. Listen, and it's so hard because how much of it is like RPO and whatnot, but like, there are so many times that I'm watching the game and I can tell right where he's throwing immediately. And if I can tell, don't you think the people that their entire livelihood is knowing what's coming next, they can tell?
Yeah, that's a good point. I do think, though, LSU's wide receivers this year are, I think they're loaded.
You know, surprise. It's to me, it's like Wisconsin line when everyone's like, oh, they lost a bunch of receivers. Like, yeah, I trust that LSU's going to have receivers.
Yeah, but they weren't this good last year, I don't think. 2 years ago when Jaden Daniels won the Heisman, they were. I'm not saying they're at that level, but they bring back Aaron Anderson, the top wide receiver from last year. They brought in the transfer from Kentucky. It was a Barron Brown, right, who was,
yep,
who was Kentucky's best receiver.
I watched him play high school football, and you want to talk about something that was very unfair.
Yeah, he can do a lot of things, too. Return
very fast.
Catch passes. Do all kinds of stuff. Nick Anderson from Oklahoma, who was hurt most last season, but 2 years ago. So, I mean, I really like LSU's wide receiver core. I think it's a fair point about Nussmeier. I still think I would rather have him than some of the quarterbacks on the other, you know, big name teams. I mean, I don't even know who the starting quarterback's going to be at Alabama, but whoever it is, I'd rather have Nussmeier. So I think that's part of it with LSU is, I think they got a top five quarterback. Maybe, you know, whether he's one or five might depend on your perspective, but I think they got a top five quarterback in the conference. I like the talent that they brought in around him, and maybe it doesn't mesh on defense. Maybe Brian Kelly just is never going to get this LSU defense figured out. But they brought in some serious dudes on defense, whereas like past off seasons, they were bringing in transfers, but they were like three-star guys from some MAC school or something, or some guy that was a backup, you know, rotting on the bench at an SEC school. Like, no, they brought in some A-list dudes this year in the portal and to help that defense.
All right, Blake, have a great weekend.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.